Last week, we heard of the healing of Jairus' daughter. She was sick, almost to the point of death. Jairus came and begged Jesus to come. In the meantime, a woman who's suffering with hemorrhages for 12 years, and the text is very clear, she suffered at the hands of many doctors for 12 years in addition to the bleeding. So because of that bleed, she was considered unclean and couldn't touch anyone without making them unclean. And yet she, with faith, said, if I just touch Jesus, if I just touch him, I will be healed. And he's healed without him even being aware of who was receiving the healing. And then we hear the death of Jairus' daughter, and Jesus puts them all out and raises this little girl up. And time and again, we hear of healings in the scriptures, and it seems like Jesus heals everywhere he goes, except today when we turn to this passage. He's in Nazareth, his hometown. They think they know everything about him. They know his mother. They know his father. They know his occupation. He was the carpenter. They know his brothers, and just a little apologetic, this is not biological brothers, but cousins, because there's no Aramaic word for brothers or sisters, or cousins, I mean. And so families were so tight-knit that cousins were considered part of the family, brothers and sisters. And we know that James and Joe's had another mother than Mary. So you could do that Bible check itself. But they think they know everything about Jesus. And because they know everything about him, they think they know him. And so they are astonished to the point of disbelief. Astonished where they have no faith. Astonished to the point that he cannot do any miracles there except for curing a few sick people because of their lack of faith. And so often the temptation might be, if we're praying for healing, that we might automatically just assume, well, it's because of a lack of faith. Or we just didn't pray hard enough. We didn't pray the right words. We didn't pray sincerely enough. We didn't desire deep enough. We didn't, on it goes, that it's some fault in us. And that's not always the case. And for proof of it, we have no further to turn them back to today's second reading. Paul telling the Corinthian community, I prayed to the Lord 3 times that he would remove this thorn in my flesh, this angel of Satan. 3 times I begged the Lord to remove it, and he would not remove it. Was it a fault of Paul? Was it a lack of faith? He who did so many miracles, he who shook off snakes, drank poison, was shipwrecked 3 times, was stoned, almost stoned to death once. Was it a lack of faith on his part that God would not remove this from him? No. In fact, Paul says, it is so that I not become elated, that I not become proud, that God allowed it, that it was a reminder that my grace is sufficient for you. God's grace is sufficient. It's not lack of faith, but rather that God is calling us to a deeper faith if he doesn't heal. A deeper faith. If he doesn't heal physically, he's doing something all the same. And theologians go back and forth, what does this thorn in the flesh, what was it? And that very word thorn, it only appears once in the New Testament. And so any translation we get is probably okay. One of my favorite ways that is translated in the rest of Greek literature is hook. Something that hooks us, that has this hook in us, that reminds us. And the word for flesh is sarx, that unredeemed stuff. That stuff that we're made of, that hasn't been turned over to the Lord, hasn't been redeemed, hasn't been reconciled to the Lord. That hook that keeps us here. Earthly. Or another meaning of that word is sliver. It's just a little thing, but we know how annoying a sliver is. Most of us have had slivers, right? You know how annoying it is, how you can't long for it to be removed. Well, Saul, St. Paul was that way. I begged the Lord 3 times to remove it, and he would not. So that I not become elated, that I not become proud. That I remember that God's power is greater than my power, that I rely on God alone, that his grace is sufficient. So what is that thorn? Some talk about it being a moral defect. Some talk about a spiritual defect. Some talk about a physical defect. If you look at Paul and the rest of his writings, at one point he writes, he gives his autograph at the bottom of the letter, and he says, "See how large I write because of my eyesight?" We know he had bad eyesight. I already mentioned he was shipwrecked 3 times. He was stoned to death. He was accustomed to being in the cold and being in the dank, wet. Can you imagine a man of 60 years old in days before aspirin? He perhaps had a little arthritis. He probably had a lot of physical pain from all that he endured, the walking from place to place. Maybe that's the physical trial he had, begging the Lord, "Heal me. I'm sorry, I want to continue your work, Lord, but physically I can't keep going. Heal me. My grace is sufficient." Or maybe it was a spiritual battle. He talks about this angel of Satan who came to beat him. Maybe it was a demonic presence in his life, an oppression in his life. Begging the Lord, "Remove this from me?" No. It becomes a reminder that other people have other demons that plague them. Or more, maybe it's a moral defect. Maybe it's some secret sin that he was struggling with, some pattern of sin in his own life that he kept confessing and asking the Lord to break it, and the Lord saying, "No, no, rely on my grace is sufficient for you." And these 3 thorns in the flesh, whatever they were in Paul's life, continue in our lives too. And we must deal with them the same. And the spiritual thorn in the flesh, there's a true story. It was fictionalized in the movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose. I don't endorse the movie, but in this movie, again, it was fictionalized, but it was based on a real girl in Germany in the late 60s, Anneliese Michael, who, for whatever reason, she was a good girl, a good practicing Catholic, who somehow got possessed by a demon. Yes, we do believe in demonic possession. We don't have to get obsessed about it or anything like that. But she, as soon as she recognized there was a priest who was called and a priest who came to her aid and through the exorcism rites tried to bring her healing, and it wasn't working. She was receiving the Eucharist. She was going to the Sacrament of Reconciliation. She was doing everything in her power to do. And one day she had a vision of the Blessed Mother who came to her and said, "I can take you to heaven now. I can take, all this can be taken away. The Christ can heal you, can free you if you would go to heaven now, or you stay on earth. And you remind people that Satan is real and that God is even more real." And she accepted the grace of God to deal with the possession. And she died possessed. The priest was arrested for negligence and homicide. He was put in jail. And in the trial, they began to understand that the priest did nothing wrong, that there was something else going on, and they began to understand there was a power that they couldn't put their finger on as a law system. That somehow satanic presence was real. And if that's real, then God has to be real. The grace that Anneliese needed was given to her to become a witness. Or in the physical realm, this cuts a little close to home. 30 years, 2 weeks, and 1 day ago, my grandmother passed away. She died of cancer. She had suffered with cancer for 2 years. Time and again, we prayed for healing. I cannot tell you how many times she was anointed. Shortly before her death, a few months before her death, she woke up from a nap, as she was prone to do, taking naps, not just waking up from the naps. She felt an oppression on her chest. She couldn't breathe. And she saw Satan sitting on her, taking her breath, robbing her of her breath. And he said, "I'll take all this pain away from you. I'll take the cancer away from you. You'll live if you just worship me." She told him, "Go to hell. I've worshiped Jesus Christ my whole life. I am not going to stop now." And she received the grace sufficient for her to suffer and to die. And she offered every week for one of her 9 children, every day for one of her grandchildren. I'm perhaps one of the few that know exactly what day she was offering for me at least once in her suffering. The graces that she received to be able to die in such a beautiful death, as hard as it was, as difficult as it was, and we're not saying it's easy, but the grace that she received is still being poured out on my family. I'm deeply convinced of that. Some 30 years later, we know that God is with us. She received a grace sufficient. She wasn't healed physically. Oh, but there was something powerful in the grace that she was spiritually receiving and able to pass on to us. When it comes to the moral realm, most of us are familiar with this, perhaps. We all struggle with some sin, some fault, some pattern of sin in our life that we keep going, and I keep going to my confessor and saying, did it again. I'm so embarrassed, and I shouldn't be. Because it reminds me that I need to rely on Christ, that Christ's grace is sufficient for me, too. That when we keep coming back to the sacrament of reconciliation, we receive grace sufficient to deal with whatever it is we need. That Christ heals us, forgives us, sets us free. Whatever it is, whether it's a physical fault or physical pain, a spiritual suffering, a moral fault, whatever it is, Christ this day gives you grace sufficient. Praise God if you receive healing. But if you don't, know that it might not be your fault. That it's not because of a lack of faith. But maybe Christ is calling you to a deeper faith, a deeper trust, to know that His grace is sufficient for you too.